Right now, I would like to welcome David Grant Noble. He is the editor of the book Santa Fe, History of an Ancient City. It's the revised and expanded edition published by the School for Advanced Research Press. And Stephen Post, who is a contributor to the book and who is deputy director of the New Mexico Office of Archaeological Studies. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Great to have you. Have you back. So History of an Ancient City, what do we mean by ancient?
If I could jump in on David, but ancient, we're talking about 11,000 years of history if we consider the archaeological past of our time.
And so what was happening here 11,000 years ago?
11,000 years ago, there were big game hunters, mobile bands of people who followed the last of the Pleistocene mammals across the plains in different environments, basically.
Did they kill off the last of the Pleistocene mammals, or how did they go away?
It was probably a combination of environmental and human-caused factors. It's still one of the big debates in archaeology as to what caused the ultimate demise of the megafauna. So
is that right?
Yes.
It is funny for you know, regular people out there to get a little glimpse of what it is that any given field, like archaeologists, sit around arguing about. But it's always interesting because we sometimes, I think, have this conception that we are, for the first time in history, making certain species extinct. But goes back at least, possibly, 11,000 years right here.
Certainly we contributed at that time, yes.
So one of the reasons that this book is revised and expanded is because of the archaeology that was done around the new Civic Center. Is that correct?
That would be one of the contributions that I added to the chapter on the archaeology was the work from the Civic Center.
And so there's a rule that whenever you dig up the ground to make a building, you have to do archaeology. What does that go?
The city of Santa Fe has an ordinance that requires that all developments in the downtown area are subject to archaeological excavation before the work begins. The city of Santa Fe, which is a subdivision of the state of New Mexico, is actually subject to New Mexico's laws. So our excavations at the Civic Center were overseen by the State Cultural Properties Review Committee and the Historic Preservation Division. That was good because we really were encouraged as well as required to do a very thorough piece of work.
Did you have the time to complete the work, you know, with the pressure of getting the building up sort of going down your neck?
Certainly archaeologists would like to work almost as long as it took the time for the deposits to accumulate. But in this case, we did have a fair amount of time. We started in November of 2004 under the direction of Steve Lentz from the Office of Archaeological Studies and completed the bulk of our excavations in October of 2006. So almost two years of intensive work on the site.
And what did you find there what did you find, and what did you find that was new?
We found a full range of archaeological, what we call deposits, basically soil filled with artifacts, and then architectural and everyday features that supported the daily lives of the people that lived on the site. But what we found was not a continuous, but some fairly striking evidence of the earliest farmers who lived in Santa Fe between 400 and 600 AD, so between 1400 and 1600 years ago. And from there, we excavated evidence of use of that site all the way up into the 20th century. In fact, one of the most exciting finds was the excavation of some fairly large refuse pits or trash areas from an 18th century Spanish colonial household that we believe may have been one of the richest families in Santa Fe at that time. So, and the way we tell that, or surmise that, is the fact that there was more Mexican maiolica and Japanese and Chinese porcelain found on that site than almost anywhere else in the Southwest for that period in the 1700s.
In their trash heap?
Yeah, in their refuse.
Why were they throwing away Japanese porcelain?
Good question. It just seems like this particular family had the ability to replace what they broke on a fairly regular basis, which is something that we rarely see in the archaeological record of Spanish colonial Santa Fe. It's really fascinating. So
how, this is a silly question, but when you excavate, how deep do you go?
In the case of the Civic Center, we were working up to 7 feet below the modern ground surface. At the Palace of the Governors, we were working about 5.5 feet below the modern ground surface. At the Rail Yard Park, because there was so much soil piled up over the top of the site, we were working as much as 10 to 12 feet below the ground. So just, it depends. And sometimes we work just a couple inches below the ground and find fabulous things.
So when was Santa Fe first inhabited as an actual city or town settlement, and not just either nomadic or just farming area?
The earliest villages were established probably by the middle 1000s AD, and certainly by the early 1100s AD. And the early villages had somewhere between 15 and 20, the houses had somewhere between 15 and 20 rooms, and they were occupied by extended families of Native American descent. They were basically farmers who moved into Santa Fe at a time that the climate, as well as the availability of water, soils, a combination of things, all came together to make year-round settlement possible.
There's an amazing picture in the book of a water storage tank that's excavated on Guadalupe. What was that all about?
That's actually the foundation of the water storage tank for the Santa Fe Rail Yard, or for the Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe Railway. And that tank, which would have stood between 20 and 30 feet into the air, was supported by the massive sandstone blocks that you see in that photo. And basically, the water was pumped up into the tank and then out of the tank and over the top into the steam engines. So it was a way to get water into the steam engines.
So when you're excavating, you're finding everything from, you know, a century to millennia.
Well, I have to say that David gave me this great opportunity to write about almost 12,000 years of Santa Fe's history, but I like to say that I had less than one word per year to talk about it, which is kind of the case. Typically, you get about a half an hour to talk about 12,000 years or 5,000 or 6,000 words, but I was grateful for the 6,000 words. It was a tremendous opportunity to add a little bit more recent information about our collective past.
That's a little dig about the author-editor relationship.
A little dig?
Sorry about that.
That was good.
So we're talking about the book Santa Fe, History of an Ancient City. There's a timeline in the beginning of the book where it talks about how in the first half of the century the river was dammed and the acequias dried up. What was that all about? Was there an attempt to actually change the farming way of life on the part of the people who were damming the rivers?
Yes, the transition from Santa Fe being a farming community to what it is today was a very painful one in the what we call the American territorial period. And that's because in the 1790 census, more than 50% of Santa Fe's population were farmers. I mean, more than 50% of the families were farming families. And almost all the land close to the river and around downtown Santa Fe today was under cultivation, mostly corn, beans, and squash. Then, after the opening of the Santa Fe Trail, and particularly after the railroad arrived in 1880, the population grew so dramatically that the residents of Santa Fe needed more water. And the water at that point was being drawn from the river into acequias to water the crops. And so also Santa Fe was suffering from periodic floods in the spring. and washing out the riverbed and houses, that adobe houses that were situated close to the river in downtown Santa Fe. And as Tara Plua, who wrote the chapter on Santa Fe's acequia system, describes, people regularly in the spring would move their doors and furniture up to their rooftops and just leave town and get away from their houses. And these floods were very destructive. So the dams had that double purpose of supplying water to the people, and the people who had enough money could install plumbing to their houses and actually have running water in their houses, but also to protect the downtown from flooding. The first dam was built in, I think, 1881. It was called the Old Stone Dam. And within a few years, there was a flood that filled it up with sediment. And then the 2 Mile Reservoir was built soon after that, which is the first reservoir that you come to now. It was abandoned several years ago and no longer is used.
This book is full of stories of the history of Santa Fe and the archaeological past, I guess you would say. What's the difference between the kinds of stories that archaeologists can tell and that historians can tell?
Well, archaeologists have this big limitation, I think Steve will agree, that they have to excavate little bits and pieces from the past, material artifacts, and then interpret them, whereas historians have documentary evidence in libraries and personal collections of papers and books and so forth, memoirs, journals that people kept, different time periods. So the documentary evidence isn't necessarily the truth, because when one writes about one's life or one's experience living in a place, you bring your personal experience, your subjective point of view, and probably your ethnic or bias to the interpretation of what's happening around you. And so there were some residents of this area who were pre-literate and did not write about these historical events, the Native Americans I'm referring to. So the history that we have of Santa Fe in the colonial period is completely from the Spanish viewpoint. And whereas there's a lot more detail and a lot more knowledge about what happened, the interpretation of what happened is from the point of view of only one side.
Is that eventually, I mean, obviously it's eventually corrected in the late 20th century, but when did Native people start documenting their own history in writing?
Well, the first schools that came to Santa Fe were really quite late, and Native Americans didn't have formal schools, formal education, until after the territorial period, after 1848, and really not until later in the 19th century. Of course, before that, they had their own educational system, but it was oral, and it wasn't an educational system that formally recorded historical events the way Western culture does. It's interesting to note that today there's so much discussion and controversy about Santa Fe school system and the quality of education in Santa Fe. And in the 1790 census, there was only one person in Santa Fe who identified himself as a teacher. So Santa Fe had one teacher in the late 1700s, early 1800s, and that person was certainly a tutor who was hired by families that could afford to educate their child. So because it was a farming community and because it was so far from quote-unquote civilization, meaning Mexico City and the Spanish colonial capitals in Mexico, education was not something that was of high value to the citizens. And that really didn't happen until, you know, the culture and the economy changed later on in the 19th century.
Associated with the the time when New Mexico became an American, a United States territory?
Yes, it wasn't just because it became American, it was because the economy changed, and the nature of the economic change, people needed to read and write and know how to do accounting. And
what was the nature of that economic change?
Well, it was really started in 1821 when the Santa Fe Trail was founded, and that coincided with the Mexican Revolution and Mexican independence from Spain. And at that point in time, Santa Fe began to look eastwards towards the United States for its relationships, foreign relationships, rather than southwards to Mexico City. And the trade over the Santa Fe Trail was much heavier and easier and cheaper to conduct than it was previously over the Camino Real to Veracruz and in Mexico City and Chihuahua. And so companies were set up in Santa Fe that these were Mexican companies to trade with Missouri. Santa Feans called the Santa Fe Trail the Missouri Trail. And wealth was acquired by certain families and business enterprises in Santa Fe who were involved in the Santa Fe trade. And this all required a higher degree of education.
So we are approaching the 400th anniversary of the city. That marks what happened 400 years ago.
Well, what happened 400 years ago was that the city of Santa Fe was formally made into a city, a Spanish colonial city. There's some evidence that a year or 2 years before that date, 400 years ago, 1610, there were some settlers who were living temporarily in Santa Fe, coming here as it was commonly the custom in Spanish colonial times for a site that was being considered for a new settlement to send some farmers to cultivate crops there for a year or two in advance. So they'd come to a place like Santa Fe that they were considering as a new site for settlement and try it out. So they'd plant fields in the spring and cultivate them over the summer and see how it worked out. And if they did that for 2 or 3 years, then the new settlement would get the approval that it needed from headquarters, as it were, in Mexico City to be formally settled. And this was true in Santa Fe, probably. We know from documentary evidence that it was true in the outlying settlements around Santa Fe after the Pueblo Revolt in the 18th century.
I'd like to say that regarding that period between 1605 and 1610, when Santa Fe may have been settled by just a small group, that's really where archaeology can help out. And that's because we haven't found evidence of that early settlement yet, but it doesn't mean we should stop looking. And by working in just a very small area, say just 15 by 15 feet, for instance, in the right location, in this case, perhaps somewhere near San Miguel Church, we might get lucky and find evidence of those first settlers. And that type of information would help to corroborate the conjecture that is developed out of the historical documents. So that's where archaeology and history are able to work together.
Are there any special technological devices you can use before you start digging to figure out what a really good location is to dig?
Well, in an urban environment, and recently we've been doing a lot of work on parking lots, some of the best technological are still paper, using the historical records to try and get an idea of how land use progressed over time. And then beyond that, we use geophysical means, such as ground-penetrating radar, things called resistivity sensors. We use magnetometers, and they rely on different aspects of the Earth's magnetic field, different qualities of the soil beneath that are, you know, in a particular area to provide signatures that then may be interpreted as potentially human disturbed contexts or human disturbed areas, and then from there we start building information or building ideas about what those human disturbed areas might be, and then we go ahead and put our excavation pits or our excavation areas on top of some of those areas to try and determine just exactly what we're looking at. So it's kind of an interplay of technology and then the more human aspect of hand excavation.
Stephen Post is the Deputy Director of the New Mexico Office of Archaeological Studies, and David Grant Noble is the editor of the book Santa Fe, History of an Ancient City. It's the revised and expanded edition from the School for Advanced Research Press, and it's commemorating the 400th anniversary of Santa Fe. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. It was wonderful.